Blog Talk Radio.
Talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your opinions, all your ideas, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gant@gmail.com. That's goforward.gant@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Paulie. What's going on?
Well, not too much. We're expected to be joined by Mark J. Spears, Yahoo Sports NBA writer. And we're going to, you know, NBA season starts next week. So we're going to talk about some headlines around the league. And also, expected to be joined by former Carolina Panthers, former New Orleans Saints linebacker Dan Morgan Jr., who will give us his take on what's going on around the league and also about all this big deal with the fines coming out with the helmet-to-helmet hits. So we're going to talk about that. He's a guy who played this game and then played on the defensive side of the ball, and give us some a good insight on what it's like now in some respect to watch the way you tackle and watch whether or not you use that head, because a lot of times, a lot of ways, when it comes to using that helmet, they tell you you want to see what you hit. You don't want to put your head down and lead with your head. You want to see what you hit. But anyway, Dan will give us the insight there. But we want to start with Kevin Cobb. And Kevin Cobb.
You mean starting quarterback.
Kevin Cobb,
starting.
Over 300 yards. NFC Player of the Week. Led the Eagles to an impressive 31-17 victory over the Atlanta Falcons, a team at the time that had the best record in the NFC. Eagles are now moved to 4-2, tied for top of the division with the Giants, and give Kevin Cobb a lot of credit, man. He played well. Played very
starting
well.
Quarterback.
He was good. Last week against the Niners, he was
starting
good, not great.
Quarterback.
This week, he was great, and he will be starting this week against the Tennessee Titans with Michael Vick still on the shelf, but I still believe on some level that. And it was my belief that you should have stuck with Kevin Cobb to begin with, because this is the year you want to see what you have there.
Oh, wait.
You've been Michael Vick on that.
No, Paul, come on. You were the biggest Kevin Cobb basher this side of the Mississippi. I mean, let's keep it real.
I was a guy
He's
who
winning me a dinner.
I was a guy who wanted, of course, Donovan to stay. I'm the guy also who I said it on this show, that I wanted Kevin Cobb to stay in the lineup because I wanted to see what you had in this guy. But it was kind of hard to put Michael Vick to the bench the way he played. Now you may run into a situation now where it may be hard to put Kevin Cobb on the bench the way he's playing.
Well, you know what? You know what's going to happen, Paul. We talked about this, and I'm busting your stones, but it's very evident and it's very real. And the bottom line is, Reed is destroying you know, any semblance of normalcy that this team will have. I mean, it was Cobb in the off season. It was Vic, and he said, you know, he's going to ride the Vic wave. Well, Vic is healthy now, but now Cobb has one good game, and of course it was a great game, and now Cobb is the hot guy. And I mean, I think he's playing with fire because, again, this is a big week for the Eagles. They're coming off an extremely impressive win. It was a defining win for them. We had talked about that on the last show. And, you know, I think if you're Reed, you at some point have to stick with one of these two guys. They have to be your quarterback to take a line from Ray Rhodes.
Well, I understand what you're saying there, and it's a legitimate point. But he ran into a situation where you had Mike Vick, who played out of this world. And like I said, you couldn't put the guy back on the bench the way he played. You couldn't sell that to your ball club. You couldn't sell it to anybody, really. But you're going to run into, you may run into the same problem. You may run into the same problem with Kevin Cobb. He's the hot hand. He's the hot guy. The question becomes now, since you got the hot hand and the hot guy, do you now go back to Michael Vick? Interesting question. Interesting thing they have to sort out there. But Michael Vick, like I said, when he went down, he was playing some great football. He was playing it all the best you've ever seen from Mike Vick.
Well, but Paul, you really think that this is healthy for such a young offense to have every night? I mean, they're like one of the lead stories on SportsCenter because both of the quarterbacks now are starting to play well. I mean, and they're both relevant, but neither one really is. They know where they are. Cobb is fighting week to week for a job, but he's supposed to be the franchise quarterback. You know, Vic is the hottest thing in the NFL, but now he's healthy and he's, you know, we're pretending he's injured. Aren't we sending a mixed message to
the
offense?
He's not 100% healthy at this point. He's not. He was questionable last week, but he was the third quarterback in that game, and the only way he would have got in is obviously if Cobb went down and Mike Kafka would have went down. But if you look at it, with Michael Vick in this whole situation, Andy Reid may have a problem on his hand because, like I said before, I'll reiterate this. You didn't want to sit down the hot guy in Mike Vick when he was on his role and doing his thing and playing at an all-world level. And you're going to run into the same problem now with Kevin Cobb, who was impressive this week, I mean, to say the least. He ran out of offense. He threw the ball down the field. He got his playmakers involved, Jackson and Macklin involved, and Brent Celek as well. And he did everything that you would want. He was getting the ball out there. He was doing everything. 23 for 29, 326 yards and three touchdowns and one interception. But, I mean, he was 23 for 29, over 70% of his passes were completed. And over 300 yards, the third time he's done it out of his five starts. So, if you look at it, I mean, Andy saw something in this guy and when he drafted him initially out of Houston and saw something in this guy when he traded McNabb to Washington. So he saw all these things, and it's finally paying dividends. The problem he may have and the problem – they're going to have a decision to make. At the end of the year. In my mind, the way Kevin Cobb is going – the decision may be to stay with the younger quarterback in Kevin Cobb and let Michael Vick, the 30-year-old Michael Vick, test the free agent market because you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. And you have Kevin Cobb locked up for one more year after this. So you're going to have a decision to make, a big decision.
Oh, well, not just that, Paul, but and the way they're going, I mean, they're not really going to be able to make, you know, an NFL-type decision, the brevity of that decision with – no semblance of, you know, with testing the waters. I couldn't agree more. If they're going to make a move here, they're now seven games in this season. They better start doing it soon. They better start picking a quarterback and moving forward. And if they bench Cobb, they can bench him for the future. But like you said, they're going to be paying. I mean, Vic is going to make, I say he gets a $20, $25 million signing bonus, signs a 5-year deal, $20 million, $25 million guaranteed.
I'm not going to say that much. Maybe 10. I'm saying along the lines of 10.
If he plays the way if he's playing this way all season long, he is going to you're talking about teams like Carolina, teams like San Francisco, teams that should have traded for him last year can definitively recognize they have that 3 to 5 year window gap with him. The Vikings.
Well, he definitely has to be. They have to be
He will command top dollar. He will command more money than a rookie because you definitively know if you're the Vikings and they don't get to the Super Bowl, they will ultimately say with Vic and Moss and Peterson or without Moss.
But my point is, with Michael Vick, I mean, the question you have to answer is whether or not you're willing to hand your franchise over to a guy that in the past has shown questionable judgment and a guy who has run into some problems. And so by giving him that money, like Atlanta did, you are turning over the franchise to that guy, and that could be a very dangerous thing. We are now joined by Yahoo Sports NBA writer Mark J. Spears.
What's going on, fellas?
Mark,
how are you? Good. Just checking out this Giants game and trying to watch the Celtics on the side. I live in the Bay Area, so it's a big deal here, and I actually got tickets tomorrow. So I think it'd be cool to go to the game if the Giants won when they could clinch everything tomorrow. But let's talk about.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, Mark. I mean, we're both big Phillies fans, Jeremy and myself, my co-host.
Oh, come on, so, let me see a game that matters like that. That's going to be a great game, the pitching matchup. Come on, guys. You got one already over there. It's no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal.
Well, Mark, let's start with Carmelo Anthony right now. I mean, you got a lot of trade talk centered around Carmelo, the latest one to the New York Knicks.
Not true.
When you look at this whole thing, will Carmelo finish the season in Denver?
Well, that whole ESPN report was not true, so it's not true. Don't worry about that one. That was not true.
They're selling the media space. That's one of the big things that Paul and I certainly talk about week in and week out. Is everyone's got to sell either the paper or the media space for the online ads and the banner prints. So Carmelo, he brings it. He'll bring it to the table.
Yeah, but he, I spent a lot of time with him last week. I was in Los Angeles, and we talked a lot, and he's comfortable with the fact that, he's going to open the season a Nugget, and he's comfortable with the fact that it's going to take a while. I mean, this is not an easy trade, and he's also very knowledgeable of the fact that come mid-December, there'll be more trade options available. I mean, for a team like the Knicks, there will be more options because, you could trade a player that you signed during the offseason. I mean, who's to say that this center that they got with the Knicks might end up being someone of interest to the Nuggets if he's playing as well as advertised or as speculated so far. And so I think, I actually don't think anything is going to happen in a hurry. I actually think the earliest that Carmelo would be moved is mid-December, and I think he's expecting that as well.
Now, Mark, my only thing with this trade, Carmelo wanting, I guess he wants to come to the East Coast, New York, Jersey. When you look at that, and in my mind, coming to the East Coast in a lot of ways now, you're going to be in a tough situation because you're going to run into that big three in Miami. So would it be in his best interest of his career to possibly stay out west?
That's a good point. some reason, he's an East Coast guy. Just like, hey, I was in Boston covering the Celtics, and I'm a West Coast guy, and I got offered a job to go to Yahoo, and they moved me out west, and they didn't have to twist my arms, I guess. Maybe his goal is, but he does have a home in L.A., which makes you wonder, I think just the big market aspect is attractive to him, as well as he wants to make sure he wins and is in a winning situation. Right. And Knicks fans or people who could certainly say, well, why would the Knicks be attractive then? But I think you in a market like that with Amari Stoudemire, who's a very good friend of his, I think they could figure it out. But I don't know if he's thought much of the fact that you still got to get through, the Celtics, and you still got to get through LeBron and Wade and Bosch and Miami too, because that's not going to be easy. Maybe he should – another thing he could do is wait and tell Chris Paul to come play with him in Denver. Maybe that might be a better option.
Right.
But I really think that he is set on departing. And he's also, trust me when I say this, I don't think he's going to go anywhere where he thinks the prospects are going to be better in Denver than they are where he's going next.
Okay. Now, and speaking of, you talked about the Big Three in Miami. A lot of hype centered around that ball club. Jeff Van Gundy talked about 70 wins in the off season. Should we believe the hype with this group?
Yeah, it's just, but it's going to take a minute, I think. I mean, the talent is there. I mean, you got two of the top, possibly three players in the league, I think, or top five players in the league. And, you know, and then you got another guy who I think is top 20. You know, so, yeah, the hype is real. But, you know, I do remember covering the Celtics. I mean, and the Celtics will show you that you could make the championship the first year. And I do think they have an interesting supporting cast. But one thing I think there is a problem there is point guard. I think they need a stronger point guard. I mean, how are you going to stop Rondo? How are you going to stop Jameer Nelson, you know, Derrick Rose
right.
of the world? All the really good teams in the East have strong point guards except for them. That's a really vital position. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe at some point they just decide to just go big altogether and have, you know, LeBron bring it up all the time. But that could be tiring, you know, and that could be taxing. So who knows? Worst on the worst, go pick up Chucky Atkins and he's out there and have him be like a Derek Fisher for the team. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just a veteran guy to make sure everybody.
Yeah, that's not a bad role for Chucky Atkins because he can shoot the three ball.
Yeah, just bring the ball up and pass it to whoever you need to pass it to. And also I think their size is a major question.
Right.
You know, they don't have the, you know, Shaq. You know, look at Boston, how big Boston is. I mean.
Well, that was one of my questions. This is a star-studded team, but, you know, I hate to bring up less talented, you know, the Detroit Pistons of the world, where they would brute these, you know, better opponents and get them out of their game. And can they survive, you know, an 82-game regular season and the playoffs where the mark will be on them? They don't have a powerhouse game. They're going to need the finesse and jump shots to win, and an elbow here and an elbow there, and that was LeBron. That was the mark of LeBron this season.
Mm-hmm.
He was hurt and he couldn't withstand the pain.
Well, you know, I think LeBron's going to be fine and motivated, but you know, I don't know that they'll also be able to sustain injuries that well either. You know, they got to be really healthy. I mean, look at the center position. Say they play Boston. Boston has, say by playoff times, Kendrick Perkins, Jermaine O'Neal, and Shaq. Kevin
right.
Garnett, Big Baby, and even further down the bench, you got Heron Goedy, kid from Notre Dame, who insurance
mm-hmm.
policy. And you got this kid, a big, giant kid that you'll see named Semi Erdin, who's 7 feet, about 300 pounds. They got size, man. And then, so the guy, Anthony, Joel Anthony, not Carmelo Anthony, Joel Anthony is going to counter all those guys. And the slender Bosch is going to counter all those guys. That's, you see what I'm saying as far as
right.
Absolutely.
I just size-wise, point guard-wise, if Boston is healthy, I still expect them to make it to the next level again.
And speaking of Boston, they had, like you said, they added Shaq. They added Jermaine on the other end. They added who I think is an underrated signing in Delonte West.
Oh, big signing.
And how much better will the Celtics be this year?
Oh, I think that they're definitely better because another thing they don't have to do is they don't have to play. People are like, oh, well, they're getting older. But those guys don't have to play big minutes. I mean, you got Delonte
right.
West and Marquise Daniels, if he stays healthy, to come off the bench and help out Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. Remember, Nate wasn't there last year at the beginning of the season. Nate came later. So now they got Nate, who seems to be acclimating really, really well there. And then you also got You know, they got depth. They got depth. They got a lot of depth. And if Rondo has to go down for a couple games, I think that'd be damaging. But if KG or the original big three on that team end up going down for a couple games, I think they'll be okay. They'll be able to handle it. It'll hurt, but if Dwayne Wade goes down, if LeBron goes down, that's really, really going to damage that team. I like Mike Miller. I like Eddie House. You know, I like that they brought Udonis Haslem back. I don't know how much Z has left. But they got to be pretty healthy, and the chemistry has to be quick. And, you know, I just think that, you know, maybe during offseason or maybe with acquiring another point guard of some sort, they'll improve. But right now I like Boston for the obvious reasons.
And I want to go to, speaking of Boston, I want to move to the Lakers real quick. Now, you have the Lakers who, again, in my opinion, have gotten better with Matt Barnes, Steve Blake, and the addition of Theo Ratliff as well. Now,
yeah.
Looking at the Western Conference, is it pretty much the Lakers' invitational pretty much again?
Well, if they're healthy. That's the key thing with them. Are they going to be healthy? And that's a big, big question. I mean, Kobe's having his issues that he seems to be overcoming. We expect, you know, Bynum to be back by the end of November, but he's not back yet. I think there's a lot of sleeping giants in the West. I think we as a media, we're being disrespectful to the other teams in the West right now because the Lakers have been so dominating and good. You know, I'm working on a Deron Williams piece right now. If they're healthy, I mean, shoot, a starting five of Deron Williams, Raja Bell, Karolinko, Al Jefferson, and Okur, it's not bad. Dallas Mavericks starting five, not bad. Spurs, not bad. Oklahoma City, going to be a better team if Melo sticks around Denver. Remember, they were just in the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago. I had a story about Greg Oden today. If Greg Oden gets back, if Marcus Camby stays healthy, Prisbilla stays healthy, Roy, I mean, there's a lot of ifs, but Portland has a chance to be really, really good too. I don't think if the West teams, power teams stay healthy, are the Lakers still the favorite? Yes, but there are certainly some definite roadblocks in there. Memphis will be better. I mean, the West is not going to be any slouch, man. I mean, and I'll tell you what, Blake Griffin is the real deal, and if he plays like what I saw and Baron Davis shows up, they could be the surprise team of the Western Conference.
It's funny you said the reaction.
My point is this, that there definitely is some talent still in the West. I'm not, you know, don't forget about everybody else there just yet.
And it's funny you said that about the Clippers. We had Clipper Darryl on the show, the world's greatest Clipper fan. He said the Clippers will win 55 games.
That's my guy, man.
A little crazy, obviously, but they are definitely
good
improved,
people,
like you said.
Ask him next time.
Great guy,
Ask him next time why he doesn't walk up the stairs. I mean that he doesn't take elevators. He's extremely scared of heights, by the way. So are the Clippers. You get it?
You're scared of a lot of things.
Go ahead.
Now, who's your sleeper pick going into this upcoming season?
I think Milwaukee could be interesting.
I definitely agree with that. It's interesting. I think Milwaukee is gonna in the East. They're gonna go the entire season without ever being noticed because everyone's paying attention to Miami. Everyone's gonna be paying attention to Chicago. Everyone's gonna be paying attention to Boston,
yeah.
And certainly New York will be on the radar because they're certainly set to improve.
Well, yeah, you know, you look at them and they just got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent quietly. Brandon Jennings will be better. He's ultra competitive. I saw him work out this summer, and the dude's nutso in a great way. I mean, Bogut, if you think about it, Bogut could possibly, and I might be crazy for saying this, but Bogut could compete to be the top center in the league if he's healthy. He's really good, man. And I know a lot of people haven't seen much of him.
He had a great year, and it's my contention that they might have beaten the Hawks if he was healthy.
Yeah. Oh, if he's there, they definitely would have beat the Hawks. But you know, if he should be fine. I'm not worried about Bogut. They could certainly be a team on the rise. And like I said, keep an eye on Portland. Keep an eye on Utah. Nobody's really talking about those two teams, but I think they have a chance to be very interesting as well.
Now, Mark, real quick, who's that team or teams that take that step back?
You know what? We've been waiting for San Antonio to do it. And I guess losing the way they lost to Phoenix, they're kind of taking that step back. But adding Splitter, I think, helps them. I think Houston is going to be disappointing. I think people think because Yao Ming is back and Aaron Brooks was kind of interesting last year. I could see Houston not making the playoffs, even though people probably expecting them to do well. You know, I could see Atlanta digressing and losing in the first round. Their team is still good, but it's basically the same. Jamal Crawford's not happy about his contract situation. Let's see what happens with Horford. They just don't, and we'll see how they are under Larry Drew, but they just don't seem to have the mental strength, you know, at all.
And they're very, very one-on-one team.
Yeah.
Very one-on-one team. At least they were last year.
Yeah. So, you know, those are kind of like the two teams, I would say. But I do think, as far as a fun, scrappy team to keep an eye on, Toronto might be fun to watch, but they're not going to do anything. You know, obviously, Toronto and Cleveland are going to digress.
Right.
It's kind of funny now that I don't pay any attention to who Cleveland is playing this year. Like, well, you know, you know that you would have to spend those 15 miserable days in Cleveland every season, you know, because LeBron was there. And now you traded from Miami.
But, you know, before we let you go, you raise an interesting point. From a journalist's perspective, from a writer's perspective, how – dumb a move was it by their owner to come out with those comments when LeBron left? And, you know, now where does their storyline go, you know, from a national perspective? Do they really just fall off the map?
You're talking about the owner?
Well, the owner and then subsequently the team. Like what you just said, you described as they're dead. I mean, in terms of a national perspective, and I wonder how much he played a role in their fast departure.
Well, he played a role because he ran his mouth and then didn't do anything about it. I mean, what did they do?
What did they do this summer?
There were people that they could have went after, people that they could have gotten. I mean, who was their biggest off-season acquisition? Name them.
Right.
Name them. They didn't do anything. He got all mad and puffed out. And, see, I think he had a means in which to bring the city on his back and, like, you know, us against LeBron kind of thing. But what did he do? He didn't do anything. They didn't make any trades. They didn't sign anybody major in free agency. I mean, like, the biggest free agent they almost got was Matt Barnes. So if you're going to run your mouth and talk the way he talked against LeBron, do something about it. And he did zero. So, you know, all that, those kind of like us against the world feelings I think that Cleveland had after LeBron left, you know, are going to go away quickly when they see how bad this team is.
Oh, I guess it was beer muscles. I guess it was beer muscles on his part.
Yeah, there you go. Very good.
Mark,
very good.
Spears, thank you for stopping by, sir. You can see Mark's work at yahoosports.com. He covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports. Great writer. And, Mark, we definitely got to have you back in the future, sir.
No problem, man. Just call me Mark, man. I ain't nobody.
All right. Take care, sir.
All right. Later.
Bye-bye.
That was interesting.
Mark,
you know,
Spears.
It's gonna be interesting, Paul. I'm for him to come out there and say how relieved he is that they're done in Cleveland.
It's definitely going to be interesting now with this upcoming NBA season. It should be exciting times. And I'm definitely looking forward to this NBA season. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And
we should have pressed them on the 76ers.
Well, I got to stop for 1 second. Let me stop for 1 second. The Phillies have taken the lead 3-2, top of the fifth inning. We can go back. Let's go back to the NBA now. But when you look at the NBA and all the surprises and everything that could happen, I mean, everybody was so quick. And, you know, on this show, me and Jeremy, we've been one of these guys who haven't been all hype and excited about this big three. Is it a great situation? Is it three great players? Yes. Yes, it is, no doubt about it. But, does these three great players together, does that equal championship? And as of today, I cannot say no. I cannot say yes. Mark Spears likes the Celtics, and I'm inclined to agree with him. And also, I mean, and if you look at the Orlando Magic are still there. The Chicago Bulls are still are a team that's added some people. So I just believe that right now we can't be so quick to just throw up our hands and just hand the trophy to LeBron and those boys.
Well, and the thing is, and he, you know, Mark brings up a great point, and we talked about it, which is the lack of size. And they may even have some relevant depth, if you will, in that they certainly, or potentially, if you will, meaning Miami, they have the players there, and they can go more than 5 or 6 deep. But the biggest problem is they have no center. They have no one in the middle. I still say in terms of Miami, when you look at a 7-game series against, it would be in the Eastern Conference Finals theoretically, against Orlando or the Celtics, they won't have no answer for, you know, especially for Dwight Howard. They can't defend. There's not
exactly
one player on that team that can defend him.
Nobody.
And the Celtics have arguably four centers that if they went in the big lineup, if they wanted to put, even if they were smart and, you know, put KG at the three, they put, you know, KG, Big Baby, and Shaq on the court with Ray Allen and Rondo.
Rondo.
That's a humongous lineup for them.
Oh, definitely. You're talking big size, and you're talking a situation that I don't think that the Miami Heat can contend with. But,
well,
again,
they can, I mean,
with all that talent, does the talent overcome it? I mean, does arguably three of the best players in the game, does that overcome all the deficiencies that we just said, all the lack of size, all the lack of a point guard, all those things? Does these three guys overcome that? And I think it's quite possible. I don't think it will happen, but I think it's very possible that they can. If you look at it, Dwayne Wade could actually run some point as well. And as Mark indicated, they could possibly go big, which might be in their best interest. The
I'm sure they're
going to 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gant@gmail.com. That's goforward.gant@gmail.com. We're expected to be joined by a former NFL linebacker, former Panther, Carolina Panther, former New Orleans Saints linebacker Dan Morgan Jr., who will give us a lowdown, and we'll go around the league with him. And speaking of around the league, switching gears now back to the NFL, you have a situation now with guys who now are getting fined for their helmet-to-helmet hits. James Harrison for the Steelers docked $75,000, and now he's talking about retiring. I don't believe it, because he's in the second year of a 6-year, $51 million deal, so he's not walking away from that. And James knows, just like everybody else, that it is a recession, so he ain't walking away from that, so we can forget about that talk. But you also had the situation with Brandon Merriweather, who helmet-to-helmet hit on Todd Heap. He was fined $50,000, and he had Dante Robinson from the Atlanta Falcons. He was also fined 50 G's for his hit on DeSean Jackson, and that hit, in my mind, was not a dirty hit. If you look at that play, DeSean Jackson actually had the ball in his hands and made a football move, and then and Robinson went to the chest with his shoulder. So that wasn't a dirty hit there. And in a lot of ways, on the defensive side of the ball, you are kind of you're kind of taking away instincts, and
that's kind of hard for
a guy to say, "Oh, let me think about it. Let me think about this hit. Let me think about this and that." I mean, and Derek Brooks actually made a great point. The offensive player, they can lower their head, and so in some respect, they are using their helmet in some respect as a weapon in a lot of ways. So
yeah, but Paul,
my whole thing, this is not tiddlywinks. This is NFL football.
Yeah.
So, and it's going to be a tough game. It's tough. It's tough.
Paul,
it's a very physical game.
That's the biggest problem, is that I think this league, and we talk about it all the time, is getting to be way, way, way image conscious, forgetting about what they are ultimately selling. And ultimately, they are selling, you know, they're selling violence, period, point blank. I mean,
control violence.
But to sell, it seems like more and more what they're trying to sell almost now, they're trying to turn the NFL into WWE, where it's, you know, it's like scripted, where they want these players to come out.
That's a little bit of a stretch there. But
no, well, you know what, Paul, the reason I say that is because, you could say it's a stretch, but they're doing it subtly. They're every year, more and more and more, they're taking away the core of this game. I mean, they're making this game. The quarterback, the best you could do was a quarterback was in the grass. Now, you know, if you hit him after they release the ball, you can get unsportsmanlike. And now they're going to do all these spearings and this, and you can, with a player who catches a fair catch has to be given opportunities. It's every year there's more and more.
That's always been in the game, but. Let's bring in Dan Morgan now. We're now being joined by former Carolina Panther, former New Orleans Saints linebacker, Dan Morgan. Dan, how are you, sir?
Good. What's going on, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Not too much. Now, Dan, we wanted to start with all these blows to the head. Dan, this past week, we had a few players who were hit with fines, mainly for leading with their helmet, and right now the league is trying to crack down on all these things. And looking at what the league is trying to do, is this truly possible?
You know, I mean, I think it's kind of crazy, man. Actually, I just had ESPN come to my house today. They wanted to talk a little bit about it, and I think they're doing a thing on Sunday NFL Countdown this Sunday, obviously, and you know, they were asking some of the same questions, and, you know, obviously I've had a bunch of concussions in my playing days, and, you know, some were from, you know, hits to the head, and others were just, you know, hits to knees and things like that. But, you know, with this whole thing with suspending players and fining players, and, you know, especially it seems like it's geared more towards the defensive side of the ball, you know, this is an instinctive game, and this is a game that guys have played physical from the time we've been little. And, you know, we were always taught to be intimidating and, you know, to go out and, you know, give it our all and lay big hits on the defense. And, you know, it just seems like they're expecting the defensive guys to, you know, hit a certain way when, you know, I mean, these are guys that are running 4.3, 4.4, 40s. I mean, they're coming fast. I mean, there's no time to think where you're going to hit somebody. You're just going to hit them. So, you know, I just don't see how they can do that.
Now, is it like when you think about it? Because I looked at some of these hits, and especially the hit that really bothered me was the Dante Robinson on DeSean Jackson. When I looked at that, I didn't see a penalty there, nor did I think he deserved a fine. I think that was more of a byproduct of DeSean Jackson being a smallish wide receiver. In that particular, in those type of plays, is it possible to think in your mind that, okay, let me not leave with my helmet, or let me make sure I do this so I won't get a fine or even get a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely not. And, you know, you look at that play and, you know, Dante Robinson, you know, he was out there and, you know, he actually had a kind of a blocker on him for a second. And, I mean, we all know how fast DeSean Jackson is. And, I mean, when DeSean Jackson catches a crossing route and he's flying in your face, I mean, you know, Dante Robinson's job is to separate him from the ball and to make a tackle. And, you know, it came on him so fast, you know, he couldn't react.
But then I think you just raised an interesting point when you said that's Robinson's job, especially, and you pointed out, against the speedy receivers. One of the things I question where the NFL is trying to, what their goal is, in really, they're putting, if anything, they're going to create an injury because they're creating doubt. I mean, they're tying financial implications to real-time reactions. They're saying if you make a mistake, we're going to take money away from you. And you know, and I really wonder why, if anything, why not try to suspend them or hold them out a quarter, but to tie this to finances, where Paul, like Paul was saying with regards to, you know, players are talking about retirement, which is somewhat ludicrous. But I think with, you know, this is so outlandish.
Yeah, I mean, like I said to you before, it's crazy. And as a defensive player, you know, to get fined or suspended for doing your job. And, you know, I honestly think, you know, that guys aren't trying to hurt each other out there. We're just trying to, you know, do their job and support their families and do it to the best of their ability. And, you know, part of that is being physical and being one of those intimidating figures out there. And, you know, you can't control where you hit somebody. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says. I mean, when you're out there on the field and you're going 100 miles an hour, it's hard to just, you know, say, hey, I'm not going to hit this guy in the head. I mean, it happens. It happens all the time. You know, and if you look at it from our defensive side also, I mean, you know, if they're going to do that from the defensive side and protect these offensive players, then, you know, let's protect us as defensive players from cut blocks and from chop blocks and things like that. I mean, you know.
Well, that was and that's the next piece. I couldn't agree more. In terms of, you watch, you know, defensive lineman after defensive lineman, you know, get the ligaments torn because they're getting chop blocked at the line of scrimmage, and we don't call that to action. But because concussions seem to be the vogue piece that the NFL has tied on to, and I mean, and you, as you said, a player who suffered many on the defensive side, I wonder really, again, like, where is what point is defensive in terms of long-term NFL implications? Just, is it there, you know, so that the games can get up to 50, 60 points so that there's no tackling? It's like flag football now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of geared that way. It's been kind of gearing that way here for a while now. I mean, with the, you know, 5-yard rule, you know, jamming receivers and, you know, hitting the quarterback. I mean, you know, let's not get it wrong. I mean, this is an offensive game. This isn't a defensive game anymore. Fans want to see, you know, big offensive plays. But the funny part about it is, on the defensive side, all fans really care about, if you think about it, is big hits. I mean, that's really what you want to see from a fan's perspective. So, you know, they're taking the fun on the defensive side for the fans away.
It's trying to hit the critical in a lot of ways, because this is a league that has profited off of the physicality and the hard hits that we've seen this past weekend. This is a league who profits off of it. So in a lot of ways it is hypocritical. Now, Dan, I wanted to move on to Kevin Cobb and Michael Vick in that situation. Kevin Cobb came off a 300-yard performance, was named the NFC Player of the Week, and more importantly, he led the Eagles to two straight wins.
Mm-hmm.
With all that being said, if Michael Vick is healthy, should he be the starter?
You know, I think there's, in my opinion, I mean, I've played against Michael Vick a ton, and, you know, I obviously never played against Kevin Cole, but, you know, I've got, you know, I'm a big football fanatic. I do some radio, and, you know, my opinion on this is Michael Vick's the better quarterback. He's the better athlete, and I think he gives the Eagles the best chance to win. And, you know, you look at what Mike Vick did, you know, in the time that he was out there. I mean, you're talking, you know, 799 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions, you know.
Right.
And then not only does he have that, is you know, he brings the Russian standpoint to it too, and it's just a whole other aspect, you know, to that already dangerous, you know, Philly offense. So, you know, I think Kolb, I think he's made a little bit of the case, but, you know, if it's me and I'm the head coach of that team and Mike Vick's healthy, I'm playing Mike Vick.
And now, Dan, it's funny, you do have a unique perspective because you did face Mike Vick many times during your playing career. Looking at Michael Vick now and comparing him to then, how different of a quarterback is this guy?
You know, I think he's, you know, just watching him and, you know, I played against him 4 years in college and then obviously we were in the same division in the pros. So looking at him now, I see a more patient guy. I see a more mature guy. And I see a better quarterback. You know, before, obviously, he's an outstanding athlete, and he could just make some unbelievable runs with his legs. But what I see now is, you know, when he does escape the pocket, he's looking more accurate on the run, you know, when he throws the ball. And, you know, he's just looked so much more dangerous than he already even was. So, you know, he's a scary player. And like I said, if I'm the head coach, there's no way I'm sitting him on the bench.
Dan, one of the discussions Paul and I have a lot is this a factor of potentially, you know, when he was with Atlanta, their not a willingness, but the fact that they did not have the core group of talent that, and certainly in the receivers, that Atlanta didn't have that the Eagles do have? Or is he really now becoming, a more well-rounded quarterback? Could this have happened in Atlanta?
You know, I think in Atlanta, he did have some weapons. I mean, you know, you look at not as many, you know, with DeSean Jackson, Macklin, with Sean McCoy. I mean, he's got some weapons. Let's face it. But you know, in Atlanta, I mean, he had an Algie Crumpler in his prime. I mean, them two, you know, they were pretty big together, and they gave us a lot of problems together. But you know, I do think that he's gotten a lot better, and I think that he's matured a lot. And you can just tell by the way he's even carrying himself now on the field. I mean, he looks like a different player out there. He looks just more poised and obviously more accurate. And, you know, I think he struggled with his accuracy a lot when he was in Atlanta. And, you know, I don't think he's showing that now.
Now, Dan, the Eagles may run into a problem here in a big situation now, because one of the reasons why Andy Reid did not sit down Michael Vick, because he was playing at an all-world level. Now, right now, Kevin Cobb is on a roll, and he led the team, more importantly, to two straight victories. And if he has a good outing this week against the Titans, can you sit down this guy who essentially is the hot hand right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would sit him. And, you know, and the reason that I tell you that is, you know, Mike Vick, I mean, you look at that Eagles team, you know, obviously they played good the past couple games with Cole, but you know, I think the energy of the team when Mike Vick's in there is even more than what it is when Kevin Kolb's in there. And, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to sit a guy with the talent that Mike Vick has. And Kevin Kolb, I think he has a bright future. But, you know, while Mike Vick's still Mike Vick, I'm going to play him. And I think he gives, you know, me the best shot if I'm the coach to make it to a Super Bowl and make it into the playoffs.
Right. Now, and speaking, let's stay in the NFC East now and go to the Cowboys, a team who many felt would be a team that would be a Super Bowl contender and could legitimately win the Super Bowl. Now, if you look at this team now, they fell to 1-4 after losing to the Minnesota Vikings. I see a team that's a little undisciplined and maybe not as talented as many believe. If you look at this team, what is wrong with the Dallas Cowboys?
You know, I think obviously they have the offensive weapons. I mean, you look across the board, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more talented offense in the league. I mean, if you're looking at individual players. But, you know, when you're not a well-rounded team and you don't, you know, play good as a team and you're making, you know, stupid penalties and turnovers. And, I mean, they've had three double-digit penalties, you know, this year. I mean, that's crazy for an NFL team to have that many penalties. And, you know, obviously, you know, Romo's a great quarterback, but, I mean, you look at some of the interceptions that he's thrown, you know, 3 versus Tennessee, 2 versus Minnesota, 2 versus Chicago. I mean, he's making mistakes. I mean, but he's a, you know, that being said, he's a heck of a quarterback, but you can't turn the ball over like that and win against those kind of teams. And, you know, I think you look at the other side of the ball, you know, I just don't think they're as good as what everybody thought they were going to be on that side of the ball. I think they're struggling. I think, you know, other than DeMarcus Ware, you know, I think of Keith Brookings aging. You know, I think of Brady James as a good player, not a great player. And, you know, I don't think they're as good on that side of the ball as everybody thought they were going to be.
Now, can they come out of this 1-4 hole?
You know, I think it's going to be tough. I mean, obviously they've dug themselves into a hole, and you know, you look at the division that they're in with the Giants, Eagles, and Redskins. I mean, there are three teams right now that are, you know, playing some pretty good football. You know, the Redskins, you know, they're kind of struggling here lately, but I mean, you look at the Giants and the Eagles. I mean, you're looking at two teams that are rolling pretty good, and you know, you look at the rest of the Cowboys' schedule. I mean, it's a tough schedule, so. You know, it's going to be hard for them to get out of the hole, especially if they continue with the penalties and the turnovers and things that they've been doing here lately.
And the team that they played this past week, the Minnesota Vikings, a team. It was the desperation bowl, as many called it. They acquired Randy Moss, and right now they're a team that's 2-3. Brett Favre struggling a little bit, but with the addition of Randy Moss, does that turn this thing around for Minnesota?
You know, I don't think it hurts. You know, I mean, look at the receivers. I mean, without a Sidney Rice, I mean, they were hurting. I mean, let's face it. And, you know, Brett Favre is struggling. And, you know, you look at Percy Harvin. I mean, his game has, you know, picked up a little bit since Randy Moss has been in there. And, you know, I think Randy just brings that veteran leadership also, not only a great talent that takes the pressure off other people, but I think he brings that, you know, that veteran leader out there that the Vikings need. And, you know, he's obviously helping them, but, you know, with the Vikings' whole situation with Favre and what's going on off the field, I just kind of see a distracted quarterback, and I don't really know how far or how good this team is going to be going forward. But that being said, they got a heck of a defense, and, you know, anytime you have Adrian Peterson and Randy Moss on the same offense, you know, anything's possible.
Now, Dan, it seems like as looking around the league, that the power is in the AFC with the Jets, who are 5-1, won five straight games. You have the Steelers, who are on top of their division. And you still have the Colts as well. If you look at the AFC right now, who do you see, in general, who is the best team in football?
You know, I think it's pretty easy. I mean, I think a lot of people are saying the Jets. But, I mean, I look at the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger back in the lineup and, you know, a tough running back in Mendenhall and, you know, obviously a solid defense. You know, I really can't go against the Steelers right now. I think that they would beat the Jets at this point. I think their defense is pretty stout, you know, and as good as Sanchez has played, I'm still not sold on the guy. I'd like to see him, you know, I'd like to see him up against the Steelers defense and see what he's really made of.
And I agree
who's
sold on. I'm not sold on Mark Sanchez. I'm not sold on him. And I agree with you on that.
And one of the bylines of this show certainly is I am kind of sold on him. I think he gets a bad rap. I think you're looking at a quarterback. They're not asking him to be an all pro. And I think because it's fundamentally not, you know, the NFL, they don't draft you to not be an all-pro as a quarterback. They draft you to be the future of the franchise, and they just need him to hit the reads. And he's been, you know, he's done that. I mean, even last game he made, you know, he threw some interceptions, but he's becoming a quarterback in that system that works very well.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with that. I mean, he is making good decisions right now, but I'm waiting for him to go up against the Pittsburgh defense that's going to, you know, shut down LaDainian Tomlinson and maybe put them in a little bit of a hole to where they're behind and they're having to come back from a deficit. And, you know, I think that's really what I want to see. So, you know, I want to see if he can put this team on his shoulder and, you know, throw to a Braylon Edwards and Santonio Holmes and, you know, put up some, you know, big yards up against a defense like a Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, at this point, I just don't feel like he can do that. You know, I just think he's too much of a game manager right now, and I think they're depending too much on the running game and defense to win them games rather than Mark Sanchez.
Well,
I do agree with that. But I think you said if you look at game one, they played the Ravens defense, and Sanchez couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I think we have seen it on some level going up against a top-notch defense, and he has proven that he can't get it done against a top-notch defense.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's a good point, and you know, that's kind of what I was referring to, and you know, he
right.
just hasn't got it done against that big defense, and I'd like to see him do that now. You know, when they do play that next good defense that has some offensive firepower too.
Right. We're talking to Dan Morgan, former NFL linebacker. Now, Dan, we talked about who you feel the best team in the league right now. But what are your surprises so far as we go around the league?
Oh, man, there's been a lot. I mean, there's been surprises in a good way and, you know, surprises in a bad way. I mean, you know, look around each division. I mean, who would have thought that the Kansas City Chiefs would be on top of their division and the San Diego Chargers
right.
would be, you know, struggling so bad. I definitely didn't. And, you know, also, you know, you look at the Tennessee Titans. I mean, a team, they're playing great football right now and, you know, lead their division right now, you know, three-way tie with Houston and Indy. But, you know, I think that they're the best team in that division and at this point. And, you know, I really wouldn't have expected that. And, you know, I'm really surprised I picked the Green Bay Packers to obviously go to the Super Bowl before the game. I think before the season. And I think they have a great team. And, you know, they're struggling right now. They've had a lot of injuries that have, you know, definitely added to the struggles that they have. But, you know, if you look at that division and the Bears are on top of that division, I mean, it kind of tells you, you know, how that division is struggling right now. So, you know, they're some of my surprises.
Dan, we thank you for stopping by, sir. It was greatly appreciated and definitely got to have you back as the season progresses. Thanks for coming on, Dan.
Know. Anytime, guys.
All right, take care, sir.
Take care. You always find a way to weasel it in, Paul. The Sanchez bashing will continue, I see.
Well, I mean, I believe I can't argue with the results so far with Mark Sanchez. They have won 5 games in a row. They are on top of the AFC East, and he's played some good football. Before this week, he had no interceptions, and he had 8 through for 8 touchdowns. So this is a guy that has played well. But at the end of the year, I won't be eating my words. I will not be eating my words. I don't plan on it, and it won't happen. You may be eating yours, but I won't be eating mine.
Uh-huh.
Mark Sanchez, mark my word, will be the reason that the New York Jets do not go to the Super Bowl. Write it down. This is here. I said it. 9:57 Eastern Standard Time, 10:20, 2010. Mark Sanchez will be the reason New York Jets will not make it. The Super Bowl.
Well, but it's not a reach, Paul. I've never said they're getting to the Super Bowl with him. I mean, I just think you're
crazy. What is it then?
Well, you know,
I mean, what
Paul,
else,
but here's the thing.
Rex Ryan,
they're losing.
All these guys have been talking Super Bowl. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got a ring.
Play the McNabb clip on the way out, and you got your ring. You got your ring comment. Play the McNabb clip. Go ahead, get it in there. Come on, you
I'm
can't bring it up fast
it.
Enough.
Yeah, I'm not
you
playing
can't bring it up.
I'm
yeah,
not
you
playing
couldn't bring it up fast
I'm not playing
enough.
I'm not going to play it. I'm not going to play it. Refuse to play it. I'm not playing McNabb. It's not about
you're
McNabb.
You're
it's about Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez. Well, for the reason the Jets don't make it to the Super Bowl. And this thing is about winning rings. If you watch Hard Knocks, and if you watch Rex Ryan, if you watch this Jets team, this thing is all about winning Super Bowls. If you don't see that, then you're stupid.
another quick hour, Paul. You know, get it in while you can, man. Get it in.
Well, we want to thank Mark Spears, Yahoo Sports, coming on talking NBA basketball. Make sure you check him out at yahoosports.com. Covers the NBA. We also want to thank Dan Morgan. Morgan, former NFL linebacker, paid for the Panthers and paid for the Saints. Make sure we want to thank Dan for stopping by. Good insight there. And also, listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. And follow me on Twitter at goforit.gan. For Jeremy Edson, this is Paul Gann.